This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This week we've got a packed house. I am Chris Spangle. To my right is Greg Lenz.
Hello, everybody.
To my left is Gina Martinez.
Hello, hello.
Online we've got Joe Ruiz. And we've got Creighton Harrington. Well, first, we made the announcement today. Gina Martinez is joining us as a regular host here on We Are Libertarians.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for having me back. I'm really honored.
Behind that computer, Gina, if you look right there, mm-hmm. you'll see a little pad of paper and a pen.
Excellent.
Okay, so every time you say a curse word, you're going to look down at this counter right here, and you're going to mark down the time, because I've never had to go back and re-edit a show after I've uploaded it. Until Gina Martinez.
Yep.
Hey, I caught them all, but...
We tried to keep... Yeah, you caught them all an hour after I uploaded the show.
I might have just pulled us offline.
No, you're okay. So, whenever you say a curse word, I'm going to need you to just look over here and mark down the time for me. It'll make life easier.
All right.
Gina is the only female of the We Are Libertarian co-hosts. And she's also the most vile and foul-mouthed.
Yes, she is. She is a real peach.
Yeah, she's a lady.
These are terrible accusations. Now I'm going to be all clean today. You guys won't even know what I'm talking about.
Let's talk about Edward Snowden. So since our last episode a week ago, it really had broke last Wednesday or Thursday. I think it was Thursday when it really started to come out.
It was when we did the podcast.
Yeah, because we had to shift gears really quickly, mm-hmm. Which that sort of happened again today with immigration and now with Syria. But we're going to talk about Edward Snowden a little bit and nationalism, because I think that plays a role in this as well. Edward Snowden. Greg Lenz, do you think that Edward Snowden... All right, so then let's... explain who that is for those of you who are under a rock. He is the person who leaked the documents. He was living in Hawaii, working for the NSA.
For Booz Allen,
Booz Allen, a contractor. He was a high school dropout mm-hmm. who eventually ended up moving up the ranks to become a hacker for the NSA and hacking into China, as he proposed. And he got some documents that proved that basically what everybody had already known, and he leaked them to the Washington Post and to Glenn Greenwald.
At the Guardian
in England. And basically it confirmed what we all knew, that the NSA is listening to Americans' phone calls, and also that they have access to the servers and databases of several...
Anyone they want.
Basically. But was it 50? I had heard 50 different companies.
Yeah.
Of which MySpace was not one. And so you had all, so they can basically go in, and if they want to check an email, they can check an email. And he basically said that if you have access to a person's email account or phone number or any document, you can essentially go and find out anything about them. Bank records, phone records, emails, Facebook accounts. They have a backdoor access to pretty much your entire life digitally, which is frightening. And when you really start to think about that, you start to think, well, gee, how do they know where to look with Elliot Spitzer, who was taking on the big banks? How do they know what phone records to look at for client number 7? How did they know where to look for General Petraeus's emails?
Well, there were no emails. They would just leave saved drafts of email messages between him and his mistress.
Right.
And so I want to know, they must have ridiculous access, because there would be no email trace there.
Right.
Nothing was ever sent. Just saved drafts.
Why did John Roberts vote for Obamacare?
Oh.
So there's a whole, your conspiratorial side of your libertarian brain can start to roam through all these past events, and I'll be applying it to pretty much everything in the future of how did they know this and where did they find this information. And they basically can look at any American's information. They don't really... If you have a friend or a family member that works at a bank, for instance, they can just type in your name and look up your your information and what your balance is at and what your transactions were. And that seems like that's the kind of access that the NSA has.
Which might make sense, though, because the internet really got its... I'm not going to say like start, because that was Tim Berners-Lee, but it really grew out of DARPANET, the internal military system.
Right.
So if it wouldn't be beyond, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they would build a back door from the very early beginnings.
Mm-hmm. So you've got this kid who's fled to Hong Kong. He's 29. He's a kid. He's just a kid who had a ballerina girlfriend. And Greg, calm down.
Oh yeah.
And he had a job that Booz Allen says was $122,000, and he said was $200,000, which is probably everybody's salary on this podcast combined twice. And very good living, very comfortable living, especially for somebody without a high school diploma. And gave all that up. And we'll at the tail end of the podcast, what we'll do is we'll just put the whole 10-minute interview with Snowden in there for you. So if you want to hear his words and listen to his words of what he said in that interview, and then when you're listening to it, think to yourself, does this guy sound like a traitor or does this guy sound like me? This guy sounds like an American who is concerned about the direction of his country. And so I would consider him a hero. I would not consider him a traitor. Let's go to Creighton first and get his opinion on Snowden and about the entire scandal, because he wasn't here last week. So Creighton, what are your general thoughts on the scandal, and do you think that Edward Snowden did the right thing?
So in general, I mean, like you said, I think the scandal confirms what everyone had already suspected. I mean, was anyone really surprised that this is what they were doing? I don't think anyone, on even like the pundits, I think that everyone had at least hinted that, yeah, everyone thought this is what was going on. Now we finally have proof. So in general, I guess I'm not super surprised. I mean, that doesn't change the fact that I'm incredibly angry about it. But I think in general, I'm just like, well, duh. But Edward Snowden himself, I am a fan of leakers. I don't necessarily. It's like they said with the like I think Glenn Greenwald was talking about how he gave them all this information and told them to use journalistic discretion to figure out which ones were going to hurt him and which ones weren't, which ones were going to hurt soldiers and whatnot. So I guess I look at it as he took into account when he gave these things over. Hey, I have a message I'm trying to send. I have information I'm trying to allow the average American to know. But at the same time, I don't want to try and have people die because I gave information that directly led to someone getting killed. So I think that in and of itself is enough to explain kind of where he's coming from. I mean, there was an article, I forget where, I saw it today. I think it may have been Salon.com. But the guy had mentioned that everyone's calling him a traitor, and they don't really know what the heck a traitor means. The Constitution's actually very clear as to what a traitor is.
Or treason, right? Wasn't it treason?
Yes.
Same day.
Treason.
Yeah, I read that. That's a good article.
A traitor, according to the Constitution, is someone who either aids and abets a declared enemy or declares outright war on the United States and is a member of the United States at the same time. He hasn't done any of that. He even tried his best to make sure that, no one would die as a result.
There's a distinction between what Bradley Manning did and what he did. Even Bradley Manning took a flash drive of thousands of confidential documents and dumped them onto WikiLeaks, gave them to Assange, and he just put them out there. And Snowden, what he did is he took these sensitive documents and gave them to two reporters and, I'm going to say reputable news organizations, WikiLeaks. I don't have a problem with WikiLeaks, but they're not, an established news organization like Washington Post or The Guardian, and they Glenn Greenwald didn't release all of the information. He released, like, I think he said, like, 15, 20% of it.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't release everything. He didn't put anyone in danger.
That doesn't mean, though, there's still not more coming from him, which I bet there will be much, much more.
So I think there's a distinct difference. I think he released it in a fairly responsible manner.
Oh, definitely.
I know that if you're Lindsey Graham, you certainly don't agree with the word responsible.
Right, but the fact that it hasn't all come out yet, and we all know it, is show, I guess, is evidence to how careful he's trying to be.
Exactly.
And I mean,
yeah,
I think
the kicker that I've had with people calling this like a treasonous act and stuff is just like, it just makes me think that all of them are they're just all drama queens. Because honestly, what he released was proof that the NSA is spying on everybody. Now, how on earth is that supposed to help Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda knows that everyone's getting spied on. It doesn't help out any enemy at all. It's, for one, we already kind of knew. And for two, all it means is that, okay, Al-Qaeda's getting spied on already, and now everyone's getting spied on, and we know that both.
Now they're going to know
to
go to MySpace.
Spied on.
Right.
I had someone come into the office today and say, you know, you really should be careful about making the Snowden kid a hero. He just gave all of our government secrets to the Chinese. I'm like, well, there's a very distinct difference. He basically confirmed what everybody already knows, which is that the United States and China hack each other, and that they don't get along, but the people get along, but the governments hack each other because they suspect, you know, that there's all these DDoS attacks and everything. It's like, that's not treason. He did an interview with a paper that sounded like the Chinese version of The Onion, the Sunday morning Chinese Post or something, and gave a 4-page long interview. I mean, it wasn't, that's not treason going to Hong Kong, which has a very good freedom index compared to the United States, which, by the way, America, Canada
is number one.
Canada is more free than the United States on the Heritage Freedom Index.
Yep.
Let's get write this down, Gina. Let's get it together.
Yes.
Right on. It wasn't even me.
When you fall behind Canada, the end is near.
Singapore was number two. Come on. So, you know, does the fact that he went to China, does anybody think that that makes him a traitor?
No, not me.
No. But no. Honestly, what it comes down to is there's this general, like, I think, propped up fear of China that is just, I think, stupid.
Well,
I
they
think
are
everybody,
communists.
I think America wants to have another big bad enemy in order to make itself feel important, and China is not as dangerous as, you know, they are propped up to be. I think the big thing is that they're just a growing economic power, and I think that they aren't even growing as fast as people try to make it out. And then we have to have an enemy. We have to search abroad for monsters to destroy. And China's a big country with a lot of people, and therefore they're an enemy. Like, they haven't even done anything to us, but we're finding reasons to be upset about them. So it's just, I think it's just fear mongering, honestly.
Let's get Joe in on the discussion. Joe, you said no to the fact that he's a traitor for going to China. Why is that?
Well, I mean, I kind of made the joke earlier that, I was talking with someone about how they've really got the story all wrong. It's interesting how the first day it was all about, is this kid a hero or is this kid a criminal? And everybody was pretty much on board with what I was saying, with the fact that the kid was a hero and that he'd done us a favor by leaking this information. But as the process has kind of gone on and the media has tried to exploit certain things about his character, about his life, the emphasis has been put more on, is this a good person? Is this a person who's trustworthy? Did he do the right thing? And less on, you know, what the government actually did and the things that he exposed. And that's what has been problematic for me. The emphasis has been in the wrong place. And the NSA's tactics, the government's tactics, is really what we need to be focused on. And I made the joke that, you know, in the legal system, when a person is charged with a crime, he can be taken into custody, he can be taken to jail. And often police will lessen the charges that he is facing if he's willing to snitch, if he's willing to give information on accomplices or a gang or some sort of grander scheme. And so even if, and I don't think that Snowden is a criminal, but even if he were, he is one criminal pointing out the folly of many criminals. And when I say many criminals, I'm talking about those making these decisions within our government. And so Creighton, back to his point with going abroad for monsters and seeking some sort of grand enemy, I don't think we even need to look abroad at this point. I think we can just look at the decisions that our government is making against its citizens internally, and you've got enough of a monster there to last you a very long time.
Ouch.
So he broke the law. You don't think that makes him a criminal? Joe?
No. I mean, he was pointing out an injustice. He was telling us something that we needed to know. I think there are times... Say that again?
A criminal by what definition, I think, is the important question.
Yeah, legally, he's definitely
a
criminal.
Legally, but morally not. No one
has denied that what he did was illegal. Mm-hmm. What the narrative has been is what, regardless of legality, is what the government doing right? I mean, they've been very clear on. I mean, that's been their main defense. The main defense of the whole situation has been this is entirely legal. Yeah. It was passed through the Patriot Act. We did through the FISA courts. It's all got congressional oversight, which is not even true. So their defense is that it's legal, and the argument is not whether or not it's legal. It's whether or not it's right. And I think that's the big question. Everybody's saying, "Well, he's a criminal." Like, what do you freaking do? Rosa Parks was a criminal.
There is going to be one problem with that, though. This is what Ron Wyden was talking about a few years ago with the Patriot Act. He saw that there was a legal interpretation of how the Patriot Act can be implemented. And Ron Wyden, that's when he alerted everyone to it, and that's what he's been talking about, is they essentially are saying that because of that business expense provision, they can watch and monitor and collect anything they want to. Then all they have to do is go to the FISA court, and then they can actually open up the contents of it. And then the House was briefed today. Was that right?
They do. The FISA courts, to be fair, Greg, they deny 4% of the requests.
4%.
4%. They only clear 96% of the requests. That's it. All right. So
yeah, but no. I mean,
I had to laugh out loud when some boob or somebody said, "Hey, this is all. You know, this is what government is about. It's." You know, it's got proper oversight. It's got the... I'm like, oversight...
Yearly audits?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, like, you're telling me that it's just like Stephen Colbert tweeted out. So, you have got nothing to hide from the secret program that the government has been hiding.
Yes.
You know, so, Gina, what are your thoughts?
I think a major point that... Glenn Greenwald made was... That, you know, there's all this talk about oversight, and, you know, they talk about how they have all the oversight rules are secret. You don't know what the oversight rules are. You know, you don't even know which congressmen actually know anything about it. So there isn't even an arguable oversight by elected representatives. But then the ultimate question is, like, you know, whether or not this falls within the bounds of the powers granted by the Constitution. And you can't even figure that out because they won't let it have standing in court. They won't. Right. They say that it has no standing, and therefore you can't talk about it. And the Supreme Court isn't even allowed to rule on whether or not this is constitutional. And it just keeps on going. And it's all got oversight from secret people behind closed doors, and that we're supposed to be okay with that.
And who are those?
And that is the actual justification that they've been giving on TV in the past week.
And who are these people? I mean, even Sensenbrenner, the representative who authored the Patriot Act. Who's been one of the most vocal critics of all of this week. I mean, he's come out every chance he gets and says this is not what Section 215 of the Patriot Act was about.
No, it's foreign surveillance.
Right. I mean, he's outraged, and he's like, I wish I had known what I was creating. I mean, my response back, you know, to touch on Snowden and fleeing to China, my response to that person was, hey, why are you buying into the state-run media of CNN and Fox News? Anytime, you know, it's like they're coming in and planting the seed in your head that he ran to China. So he must be a traitor because he's in China, our enemy, the great commie. It's like, think outside the box, man. I mean,
the
first
story I saw was Russia was considering granting him asylum. And I was like, is this 1987?
Right.
What is going on?
Yeah. So
Vladimir Putin.
The lukewarm war.
Yeah. Yeah. Gina, what are your thoughts?
You know, I don't want to declare hero or traitor just yet, but at this point, I think what he did is, I hate to say it, admirable. And I only hate to say it because it's in, I guess it's dissidents.
Yeah.
It's offering dissidents to the government. And I think that that was part of what we wanted to discuss tonight, that whole patriotism, nationalism, where's the line drawn? You know, I have to applaud somebody that has the courage to see something that they think is wrong and has the, I guess, wisdom or the wherewithal to find a safe and pseudo-responsible way. And we can argue whether or not it was responsible to leak it so that his countrymen knew what was going on. And he obviously took on considerable risk to himself, so much so that he's had to defect to a foreign country simply because of, you know, speaking what he saw to be the truth about something that he felt was wrong, and obviously a whole lot of other people do too. So I think it'll be interesting to see the way the propaganda machine tries to spin it and which way the administration or whomever is trying to cover up or, I guess, spin doctors.
David Brooks wrote an
David
Brooks wrote an article that we posted on our Facebook page today, which is, what is it, June 13th?
Yes.
This afternoon, he wrote an article basically saying, all you damn libertarian kids, write that down, all you damn libertarian kids need to grow up and join the collective. What he did was irresponsible. He's just an immature young kid who shouldn't have access to all of this type of information, and he just betrayed everybody. He betrayed the Constitution because he took it upon himself to be the judge, jury, and executioner on what should be released, and didn't allow the government to tell us what ought to be released.
Did you read his actual article today?
No.
He wrote an article about he represents essentially the millennial generation, because what he did was the atomization of society.
That's what I was saying, yeah.
Yeah, and I swear to God, that guy is so desperate to be liked as the only Republican that's evolved in New York. Like, if he got disinvited from one dinner party, I think he'd be found hanging from a ceiling fan.
And basically, the whole thrust of the argument was that all these Ron Paul kids who are loners, who are these, you know, he basically compared, he didn't say it outright, but he's comparing him to an Adam Lanza.
He's comparing him to the
Batman shooter kid.
Yep.
With the red hair. I mean, he's, you know, he's comparing him to one of those lone wolves.
Shouldn't we
know
that guy's name?
No, we shouldn't. Okay. That guy can
die in a fire.
Wow. So I'd be happy to arrange it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Okay, but who was the latest TMZ craze?
Amanda Bynes.
See, there we go.
Of course.
That's because she is a recurring topic.
She's a beauty.
You're ugly.
We dig crazy.
That's why. Never mind. So
go ahead and say it.
That's why we have Joe on the podcast.
Nice.
So we have. So, do you think that it is irresponsible of him to release this information? Because it is a valid point that can be argued. Is it really his place to release sensitive national security information? I mean, when there's not a peer review of his fellow national security agents. I mean, Greg, what do you think about that?
Sure, I do. I think his job is to do essentially foreign surveillance. That's the whole premise of the NSA. It should not be to do domestic surveillance.
Right.
And he was in violation of what I'm positive was his public job description. I'm positive it had to have been. And so I think he did what's right because he couldn't live with himself. And I don't think he was in any way, shape, or form. He did the right thing, and he absolutely didn't violate a just law.
Amen.
Online boys?
Yeah. I keep getting that song stuck in my head that I always feel like somebody's watching me. You know that song?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I keep getting that song.
Unfortunately, yes.
Unfortunately,
no one is watching.
Lowest rated episode
this
season.
Freak.
No one is watching you, Joe.
Go ahead, Creighton.
Does anybody else like go to the bathroom?
I was going to make the point that actually, I think I lost it because Joe sang that song.
No, that brings up a good point, though. Does anybody else like do smart-ass, disgusting, vile things into your phone?
Nope.
Oh, well, Joe,
okay, first of all, you're bored.
Joe sings a lot.
I got it.
Okay.
Before I forget it again. So we were trying to make the point of whether or not, you know, he broke any, like, what, is he in the wrong because he just kind of just made a unilateral decision to release all this information without, you know, any checks. And I think I think that speaks to something that I was ranting about in the chat the other day, the Facebook chat, which, I mean, it's like, who is supposed to be the ultimate arbiter of, you know, the authority of the American government? It's supposed to be the people. I mean, it's like, it's not like he released this to, you know, some foreign government or something. He released this to the average Joe American to consume and develop an opinion upon. And we're out here saying that he broke the rules because he told us stuff that's happening in our own freaking government when our representatives wouldn't do it for us. It's like, give me a break now. And I think what it speaks to is this general, and you can beat this out, I guess, Chris, like you made the term up. It's a general pussification of America.
Love that.
You did not make it up, and that does not need to be bleeped.
That was Adam Carolla. Yeah, it's from his book, We'll All Be Chicks in 50 Years.
It's like, there is a significant portion of the American public that is just okay with all of this wiretapping. It's okay with all of this. I mean, they're not even, it's not like they're on the fence. They're okay with it. And it's not just like a 10% of America. It's like, I think, depending on what poll, it's within the margin of error of half. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think it just plays down to our culture is that, I mean, our grandparents, like my great grandpa who went to World War II, he would have kicked my ass if he would have thought that I would be okay with this. I mean, my grandpa, who would live during the Cold War, would beat the crap out of me when they had nukes, when Russia had nukes aimed at every major American city, and they wouldn't even put up with this crap when it was in the freaking height of the Cold War. Yet you have a bunch of scattered groups of people around that can't even organize themselves out of caves, and we have to go down and we have to cower and give away everything that we've ever believed in because we're scared. Because Americans have been raised in a mentality that passing the buck onto authority is responsible control of yourself. You pass your self-control onto another authority, a faceless entity, and say, there, I've done my job, now keep me safe. Take away my freedom because I want to be safe.
Go ahead
and
treat
me
like
I'm... Never addressing the fact that you can't be safe. There is no absolute security. So it's really just, I think it comes down to, it's like the culture has been out of sight, out of mind. It's like until something is up in their face, until some soccer mom finds her midnight, you know, frolics amongst some disreputable website thrown up on national TV because the NSA is watching it, people don't care because it's out of sight, out of mind. It's just there is absolutely no, there's no desire on the part of a large group of people to even pretend that they have any responsibility with their own rights. It's the authority, they have the authority, they have my best interest at heart. I just want to go pick up the kids from soccer practice and watch American Idol tonight, leave me alone.
And that's what Obama said this week, is, hey, if we're not all going to trust the government, then we've got a problem here.
What?
Yeah.
I missed that.
One. That was a good joke.
Yeah, he did say that. That was great. Yeah, I keep, maybe I'm a little self-absorbed, but with all this
really?
Discussion about, you know, what does society think about this? What is, you know, what do the American majority, what do they think about this? And, like, I just keep coming back to me, and I'm thinking, like, that money that comes out of my paycheck that could be going into my children's mouths, it could be going into my pantry,
yes,
that money is being used to pay people to spy on me.
Yes, it's
and
insulting.
That is, just pisses me off to no end.
Even on a deeper level, you're working for them to spy on you. If you even go beyond that, the work you do is literally work in order to allow them to tap your freaking phone.
Absolutely.
So this leads into a question that I really keep going back to, because let's talk about the emotional side of it. I've not slept well this week, and I am more angry at the government than I've probably ever been. You know, it really, there are just certain hot button issues. Like, I'm pro-life, but I really don't want to have an argument about abortion. It's just not one of those things that I think it's ever going to get solved. You know, immigration, the big debate on immigration is coming up, and I'm just like, really, we're arguing over 11 million people.
Wanting a better life.
You know, wanting a better life. Like, get out of here. But that plays into this next question. You know, what it really comes down to is I feel like we're at a point where when I pledge allegiance, it is no longer to the government that is created by this Constitution. I no longer feel that I'm pledging allegiance to anyone other than my friends and family and my nation. You know, when I feel like we are so far away that the government is, it's not American, it's not representing the Constitution, and that I look at people like Obama and I look at people like Lindsey Graham almost as terrorist figures. I mean, I know that sounds like complete hyperbole, but it's just like you're traitors to the Constitution, and I've never been one of those people. I've always been very level-headed and rational that this is the way that it works, this is how it works. I'm now at a point where I'm like 75% Adam Kokesh. I mean, not with the violence, and I would never argue for an armed revolution, but it's like I'm pissed off, and I'm so pissed off that like I don't even know where to channel it right now yet, you know? Is anybody else feeling that way about this story? That there
totally.
Is a complete separation?
I'll let somebody else get in. But I think just to preface before we start talking about this, I think I'm less pissed off about the fact that they're doing it, but more pissed off about the fact that we're allowing it to happen. We
yes.
have allowed it to happen, and we are just okay with it.
Right.
At least a large portion of Americans.
Where is the outrage?
Yeah, you know that Edmund Burke quote, that's all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. Like, where are we? What does this say about the goodness of our country that we're not emboldened enough to stand up and do something when we see something like this occur?
Dietrich Bonhoeffer, to not speak is to speak. I mean, you've got to speak up against this stuff. I mean, how do you feel? What is the emotions that you have when you hear these kind of stories, Gina?
Do you just want more bleeps in here, Spangle?
That's okay. you've got a job now. You can cuss all you want.
A very high-paying, prestigious position.
Yes, as the hash mark over here. No, it does piss me off. It does piss me off to my root, to my core. It does make me angry. Okay. It really pisses me off to find out that my government is taking, like you said, my money to spy on me. It really gets under my skin and it makes me angry. Who do they think that they are to, I guess, get in on my conversations, my communications? I actually heard on the way over here, I'm not even sure what show I was listening to, but there was a broadcaster speaking about how they can intercept the communication. So in the event that they really don't want you saying it, you won't even have the opportunity to get it out of your mouth or at least across the digital communication. And then they have record of it, and whomever you intended it for doesn't have it. So it's offensive. It's offensive to my core. It really, it's as though the government of my country has declared war upon the citizens of my country, and that's absolutely asinine.
Well, when you listen to Edward Snowden's words that we're going to put at the end of this episode, you listen to his words, he sounds like a libertarian who is deeply concerned about his country. And then he's called a traitor by people like Lindsey Graham and John Boehner, and Barack Obama hasn't said it, but I'm sure he's thinking it. Like, they are declaring war on American ideals. Mm-hmm. They're making it legal for them to subvert the libertarian spirit in the United States.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And, you know, as I understand it, the Fourth Amendment came to be because we were protesting... I forget what they
House
were. It was
British
like a,
soldiers.
But it was like a blanket warrant.
Yeah.
It was a warrant.
Yeah.
General
warrant. The writ of assists.
There you
it
go.
Was the, yeah.
They okay. were doing what they did in Boston, ironically.
Yeah. Essentially, yep. right. And then
which
we...
is, and let me explain that, where they just said, we're searching door to door, we're going through every house, and we're looking for people like Paul Revere.
Yep, no we're, cause.
Yeah. No cause. No probable cause to search your stuff at all. You have no privacy. Sound familiar?
And we said that we would not stand for a general warrant then from the King of England, but it appears as though we've all sat back and taken a general warrant into our digital communications from the King of what? From
Kenya. Stop it. Joking.
Stop it.
Just trolling.
I mean, it just goes back to the fact that Americans are just so freaking scared.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ultimate reason, is that we what color is the terror so scale?
You know what? I'm not sure it's scared, though. That's what concerns me. I think it's docile.
Yeah.
I think Americans have become docile. I think we have accepted we will take certain intrusions in as far as in order to get trade-offs economically. We are willing to accept big government as long as we get certain, for instance, goodies. And
hold on, I'm checking my iPhone right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll hold everything. Mm-hmm.
All right, go ahead.
No, but I mean, I think that de Tocqueville wrote about it. Once you get the masses are on the toll, it's over. It's game over. And that's what's been worrying me for the longest time. I actually thought that Bush was going to lose in 2004, even against John Kerry. But just based on the demographic trends and how Hispanics are voting, how fewer and fewer and fewer. I mean, Republicans are just as bad, but at least they pretend to care about liberty. Democrats don't even, I mean, they talk about civil liberties until they get in office.
Right.
There's just literally nowhere to even go vote. Who do I even go vote for if I care about civil liberties? Who do I go? I mean,
because your average voter, you can vote for libertarians, but your average voter is paralyzed by fear that if they don't vote for this team, then the other team's going to get in when both teams are exactly the f-ing same. Damn idiots.
Yep.
So it's just all right.
It really though.
You know what I think? You know what I think will change it? And I got my hopes up. This is a total Schadenfreude. But, you know, there was on beforeitsnews.com, which is as credible as prisonplanet.com and natural news, there was a rumor that, you know, Glenn Beck always comes on and he says, I'm going to have something earth-shattering that will change the course of the republic tomorrow. And then he came out today and it was like, some senators and congressmen are going to say no to immigration. It's like, okay, well, that's
Shock.
More of the same. That's nothing. But the rumor last night on the Twittersphere and blogs was that Glenn Beck has a whistleblower that has documented evidence that John Roberts was blackmailed into his vote on Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think of the implications of that. Let's say that were true. Let's say at some point, somewhere along the line, they can prove that this blackmail machine that we are all paying for, this blackmail machine that they have built and have access to, don't fool yourself that there's not political access to this. Because if there isn't now, there will be. There will be. And I think that's what it's going to take for something like this to end. It's going to have to be a whistleblower coming out and saying this major event that you all can't figure out why this person did what they did was blackmailed because they had access to X, Y, and Z. It's going to have to be a major scandal like that for people to really care, and it's probably going to have to involve genitalia touching each other to get your average American to be
remotely
arrested.
Why are we so terrified of sex, and why do we allow it to control our politics? Like,
we're
going to
take that up off the air, Gina.
Well, it's because it's always the Republican Party where
it's
those
not,
things happen.
It's not. It's not always the Republican Party.
Well, I mean,
it
a lot
goes
of
back
time.
Historically to the kings and queens of England. I mean, okay, you're right.
Write
so
that down.
It's... So, yeah, I think that's what it's going to take. I mean, how do we bring this down? How do we stop this? I mean, are we all going to be Edward Snowdens and just stop paying our taxes? And
no,
what do we do, Greg? Tell me.
I think you do have you start something like a National Whistleblower Day. You coordinate your resources with ACLU lawyers, with some of the greatest legal minds, and you build it behind it. Coordinated attack on the same day, whistleblowing. The press would crap their pants. They wouldn't even know what to cover. I think there's ways to do it. I think
that might be brilliant. I'm sitting here thinking, how are you going to get the government to create a National Whistleblower Day?
We don't need the government to create
completely
anything.
Completely bypass them.
Yeah,
I like
who
you
cares?
Thinking.
Who cares? You know what I would do?
Huh.
I would say, no, we're going to just have all 50 states create it simultaneously. We don't recognize the federal government's ability to create national holidays.
Nice.
You know, anything to stop this stuff, because I don't see any end in sight. I don't see a single stop on any part of the train of big government. I mean,
and
Rand
really
Paul
think is because is of,
the closest thing we've
people
seen.
Are docile, Greg.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
You're fine.
No, but you know, I mean, like you're saying that this is what you would do, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but you know, you have to get a lot more people on board with an idea like that. Creighton's saying because you know the Americans are are fearful, and you're saying because they're docile, I think it's a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. The fear has made them docile.
They fear change.
Yeah, you know, like I have two kids. I have a wife. I love them. I would never want to see anything bad happen to them. And you know, so while there's a very good part of me that's, you know, standing up and saying everything and being outspoken, and yeah, I'd, you know, storm Capitol Hill tomorrow if I had the chance. And then I take a step back and I say, but wait, there's people who I care about more than I care about myself. And, you know, what if something bad were to happen to them? So it does.
Sounds
it puts
like
you in kind of between a rock and a hard place.
No, I mean, you have a lot to lose, but that doesn't mean you can't contribute by donating money to help represent, you know, put together a legal fund for a whistleblower. It doesn't mean there aren't a ton of ways you can't contribute.
See, the thing is, though, it's not so much that, you know, people are scared into not doing anything. It's that they're scared into agreeing with the government. And that's the point I'm trying. It's very much what the point that was made in 1984. I mean, everybody's made a lot of comparisons about 1984, but outside of the surveillance state part, there is the argument that Orwell made that, you know, when a government is so vast and so entrenched within a culture, you know, they can go out and say that 2 + 2 = 5. And there will be a significant amount of people that say, no, 2 + 2 = 4. And they will hammer it down that 2 + 2 = 5. And if you have a government so entrenched, they won't. It's not like the people are just scared into saying that 2 + 2 = 5 because they have a lot to lose. It's because they honestly believe that 2 + 2 = 5. And that's a point that Orwell's trying to make. And that's a point I'm trying to make, is that we have lived in this, you know, fear mentality since 9/11. And really, I guess a lot of people came of age in it during the Cold War. And we have just lived under this idea that the law is reality, and that whatever authority says is what is real, that we honestly believe that these things are what they say they are, that the government is that whatever the government is doing is honestly there just to protect us, and that we have to pass the buck on to them, because if they're not there to protect us, then we will die. Whether it's by Al-Qaeda, whether it's by some other faceless entity, because we just honestly believe that they are our lifeblood. It is so entrenched within, you know, the very culture, very mentality of Americans today. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is just we are so scared that we believe the government is this all-powerful entity that it tries to claim itself to be. And they forget that they have the ultimate authority over it.
I mean, I do agree to an extent, but I think we've grown tired of that. I mean, I know the poll you were talking about, and the way the wording was of that poll about us agreeing with the surveillance was, it was only on the foreign surveillance. And that's why when they asked it about, I think it was Rasmussen, when he polled about domestic spying, it was like 65% disagreed. So, I mean, that gives me a little bit of hope. I just don't know what is the carrot to lure them off the couch, you know, to even care. I don't know if it takes someone being highly credible and then exposing it and almost subversion, or maybe it's like a Goris one. You have Bitcoin and you have Anonymous do a coordinate. I mean, I don't know what it takes, but it takes
Anonymous
something.
Anonymous sounds like a good idea. If you would like to whistleblow something, get a hold of me.
His whistle needs blown.
No, stop it now. I'm trying to be serious. We've got a very small distribution network, but I know a lot of people here in Indiana especially, but I can get a hold of a lot of different people. And if you've got some legitimate stuff, don't come to me and say, I've got proof that, you know, Trade Center 7 was up and standing, blah, blah, blah. So none of that, but, like, you know, I do some PR work. So
just leave that one at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I want to talk about nationalism, because again, what comes to play into this is that the government is not me and I am not the government anymore. And the government does not represent me, and there are no politicians that represent me, at least not the ones that are, with the exception of, you know, the Amashes and, you know, I can count them on one hand, let's put it that way, that represent my ideals, and my voice is not heard within the political system. And part of me just wants to say, screw it. You guys have fun with your police state. I'm going to just go do something else.
Costa Rica sounds nice.
Yeah. When you have this situation, when you look at the immigration debate, for instance, that we're about to start having, nationalism plays into it there. Here are the terms. Nationalism is the socially constructed belief, creed, or political ideology that involves a strong identification of a group of individuals with a nation. Patriotism is a cultural attachment to one's homeland, excluding differences caused by the dependencies of the term's meaning upon context, geography, and philosophy.
So nationalism would actually be the more the term you would adopt for ideals then.
Right.
Because it would be more attached to
They don't mean nation like that. They mean nation in the sense of like you can call you know there's the nation of a race. There's the nation of women, the nation of race. They're talking about nation in the old fashioned sense.
No, I know. But then neither one are actually it's civic virtue that we're really if you're going to be nationalistic or you're going to be what today we consider nationalistic or patriotic, I think we think of patriotism as, oh, you represent the founding documents, America, all those things, you know, liberty, freedom, mm-hmm. all those things.
Maya just walked in. We will give Maya the microphone before this segment is up. Let's just settle on a term, okay? Let's settle on patriotism.
Okay.
What does patriotism, and let's go to our two Republican correspondents first. So when does the love of country become unhealthy?
When you continue having it, when the country abandons its ideals.
I guess it's like any other relationship. Mm-hmm. Once you're being abused by the other side, it's time to cut it off.
It's no different than someone stopping calling themselves a Christian when they go on a crusade against the
I know how to start a discussion real quick. Hand that microphone over to Maya. Maya, tell us what patriotism is and why is it a bad thing?
What is patriotism?
Because I'm not going to ask you why you think it's a good thing. Because that would be a fruitless waste of everyone's time.
What is patriotism and why is it a bad thing? You defined patriotism a minute ago.
Right.
Now, how can you really put anything behind that? Why would you have patriotism when it's an ever-changing thing? It's no different than any other false social construct where you have traditions and everything else where it can be muddied, it can be, you know, bastardized and everything else, and it can just be it's frivolous. It's absolute crap like any other tradition that's the ways we've always done things, and you can put pretty colors and banners on it and people can fall in love with it. It's no different than hero worship or anything else. It's just another false construct and it's crap.
Why do libertarians of your variety not like nationalism? Why are you for open borders, for instance?
They're arbitrary lines on a map put together by a piece of paper. What does that mean to anybody? Just because you're born somewhere, why won't we bring back blood rights and family feuds and things like that where, you know, you can't run for president unless you're part of this certain bloodline? Same arbitrary crap, isn't it? I mean, what's just draw lines of maps? So if you're below the border in Mexico, in the south of the United States, well, you're just screwed. And you can't cross over and you can't do business without asking permission from the government and everything else. Borders is just another step that gets in the way of everyone doing a free market. If you're for free markets, you can't be for open. You can't be for closed borders, period. Because then there's regulations, there's tariffs, there's trade, everything else. Think of all the disputes and wars in the world have been over because of these arbitrary lines drawn on maps, on pieces of paper. It's
and
crap.
Who gets to control them?
Right. Yeah. Because it's another step where you're giving something or someone power, and then they get to fight over it and grow it.
Creighton? It's good to have the old band back together.
I'm not necessarily opposed to borders in the sense of like them existing. I do believe that you know, if we don't have like, for example, the American border, you know, encapsulates where American law applies, and I think stuff like that is okay. I mean, obviously I'm okay with, you know, like immigration and free trade and all that stuff, and I think that's completely possible when you don't have whether you have borders or not. I think what sullies it is when people use, you know, the law to affect the economy. I think that's the point that Maya's trying to make. I know that she just doesn't like borders at all because she doesn't like government. But the idea of, you know, borders isn't, I don't think it's necessarily in and of itself a terrible thing. But that being said, I also am okay with, I guess, identifying with a country. I know there's a lot of libertarians at least are against even identifying, you know, as part of identifying with a country.
But I mean, it depends on your ideals, right?
Yeah. I'm okay calling myself an American, and I'm proud of being an American, but I'm not, like, identifying myself as, you know, the current administration or, I mean, whatever laws are on the books. I'm identifying myself with a shared tradition, shared history that, you know, everybody who is an American has. I mean, you know, things like the Declaration of Independence is probably the document closest to my heart, and that's something that I can say I am a part of that. I mean, I am part of that, those people, I'm part of those ideas, because that is the very piece of paper that made us a distinct entity in the books of history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. And I think you're allowed to say that you're an American and you're proud of it because of those things, because the Constitution was the greatest step forward from a governmental perspective in the history of mankind, enshrining ideas that we believe, classical liberal ideas. I think these things are okay to identify yourself with as an American. And I don't know if that would be called nationalism or patriotism. I don't know. I guess it's more of a traditionalism, I guess, is the way I would
I'm pretty sure that is exactly what civic virtue is.
Right. Gina?
On this one, I'm somewhere between John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen. I would definitely like to imagine the world with no countries.
It's a terrible place to be.
Actually, it's not too bad. I
Death
mind.
In New Jersey? What's yeah. the difference?
Fair enough. But, you know, born in the USA, America, I still have, I'll probably always have bits of that running through my veins. I will call myself an American. I won't call myself feminist. I won't declare a whole lot of things, but I will call myself an American proudly because I do love my country. Even though the fact that it exists creates some strife and rift for, you know, that sucks, but it's just like girls are better than boys and everybody knows it. It's just one of those things that intrinsically the thing that you are born into is the best and your egotism gets the best of you. On that note, Spangle, you should go make me a sandwich.
So do libertarians...
Give me back my rib and I will.
So do libertarians inherently reject the idea of American exceptionalism?
Depends
Maya.
On the breed of libertarian.
Hey, Maya, come use my...
I think Maya, though, you would consider yourself a voluntarist before you consider yourself anything, wouldn't you?
Like the idea...
Yeah,
the,
give me a second. Give me a second. I'm going to switch over here. Huh?
You would get rid of the Constitution. You'd go to a completely governmentless society.
Well, let's... Hold on. Let's answer the first question. You asked about American exceptionalism, right?
Yes.
Well... What does that even mean? That America is somehow better just because it's where we're at? What, and then why do we harp on people that are like France exceptionalism and yeah, the UK? Well, the UK used to think they were the best in the world and not all the rules applied to them when they built their empire and took over half the world, right? That was British exceptionalism. So I don't see why.
Well, let's be fair. On a philosophical stance, if you ask somebody who's like really thinks about like American exceptionalism, they're not going to say that America is great because it's America.
Powerful.
They're going to say America is great because of the
we're not because we're not you're not living in Indiana. You're not exceptional. Honey Boo Boo is not exceptional. Our ideas, our constitution, the form of government,
our
that was
bastardized
created,
ideals.
Would
so I think the thing is like if you agree that the Declaration of Independence or the ideas within it or these kind of things are important and that they are universally can be identified as values, as good, then by that logic, you are taken to the fact that the country that, you know, created them, essentially created those documents and enshrined those ideas, is then by definition a good country. It would be better than a country who enshrined slavery and tyranny.
But we did at one point have slavery. And
no,
we now have
no,
tyranny.
I'm not saying it's not a timeless thing.
It's not an ideal. It's not just American exceptionalism. What does that even mean? America or, you know, United States exceptionalism. The basic idea behind that, no, not all the states are great. Not everything about this country is great. And why are we – our ideals are exceptional, right? Supposedly is what you're saying. Then why do we apply that to a country? Why are we applying that to – borders and a system of government? Why don't we apply that to the ideal and say, well, technically, like libertarian exceptionalism and everything else? Why do we have to apply it
well,
to
I,
a
again,
country?
I think it
well,
comes
is that
back
even
to like
debate?
A shared tradition. I think it comes back to a shared tradition idea. It's not necessarily just the borders on the map. I think
and
it has a lot to do with
shared
the idea
tradition?
Of like
we are
a
country
of
immigrants. Why would we ever want to hold this country up higher than anything else? Why don't we just hold up our people and who we are?
I think that's what they try and do. I think
I've
they just
never
use
seen
American
exceptionalism
for the sake
be
of
used
brevity.
That way. Because there's countries. We're applying it to a country, which means we are going to then, because human nature, we're going to apply it towards other countries and say, you're not as good as us. And if you don't practice our same ideals, we're going to make you. That's how they use. That's how they've always used in war stuff, is that we have to force our Americanism on everybody. That's absolutely true. It's a flawed thing. If we're going to apply it to something, apply it to those thoughts and ideals and that philosophy, not to some giant entity like a country that can forever evolve and change when a core set of principles and ideals, like a lot of the founders read, you know, Cicero and everything else. Why don't we actually apply it to the principles?
All right, thank you, Miles.
I think we do, and I think the majority of the idea
as, you know, the encapsulation of it at its root. I think at the beginning it was really just this idea that the fact that America was founded upon classical liberal ideas, and that everyone in the world, for the most part, at least at the time the term was coined, understood that, you know, individual liberty was something of value for the entire world to embrace, that it put the United States at an ideological advantage, maybe. But it has since been bastardized into the idea that whatever the United States therefore does is good. And I think that's where it's wrong. I don't know. I mean, you can still call, I guess that's still called American exceptionalism, because, I mean, I don't really use the term too much. But I think what's happened is that people see whatever the America does is therefore good is wrong. I'm saying that's wrong. That's not a good philosophy to have. But the idea that, you know, the foundations of the American system are virtuous regardless of border, regardless of who you are, regardless of what country you're from, and therefore the group of people that are most identified with that history are not necessarily morally better, but
they benefit from the ideals.
Something to emulate, a country to emulate in that sense. Now, of course, there are things like slavery. There's dark things that we've done in our past that people shouldn't emulate. And I think that's a fault of just, you know, assuming that all of history is good. You know, you pick and choose the good parts of history, and then you try and promote those as the only history that matters. But at the same time, I don't think it's necessarily a damning prospect to just be proud of your heritage, to be proud of, you know, people literally fighting and dying for something bigger than themselves. I mean, people literally died. They fought, they died, they bled for these ideas. And they didn't bleed for their country. I'm not talking about, like, the World War II and the draft. I'm talking about the people that went out there and they fought for, not for America, but for the ideas.
Someone was making a...
For self-governance. For.
Someone was making a distinction the other day, and I don't remember where I heard it. And I've never served in the military, only Maya has. And, you know, the mentality of our soldiers over time, up to Vietnam, essentially, is we're fighting for American ideals. We are fighting for American exceptionalism, and we're fighting for the things that make America great, i.e., the Bill of Rights, the liberties enshrined in our negative charter, the Constitution, makes America great, the opportunities in our free markets that we used to have, and all of the things that libertarians talk about that are being eroded currently, the things that made America a place to prosper, and the massive amount of innovation and growth that we've seen over the last 200 years because of America being an engine. That's what our grandfathers fought for. Hold on. That's what our grandfathers fought for in World War II. They fought for those ideals. And that soldiers...
And even to that point...
The soldiers of today are fighting for each other. They're fighting for the man next to them. They're fighting for their friends. They're not fighting for those American ideals because they don't feel the government represents those ideals.
And then when they get home, a lot of them are fighting for their lives because they're suicidal, and we're losing more men to soldiers to suicide than just about anything else once they get home.
I mean, is that something that you identify with, Maya, that notion of, I didn't go into the military to fight for the liberty.
Feeling I got and everything else, and from the different branches I've talked to and everything else as another military member, is after I joined the Air Force, I didn't necessarily choose it. I was there for the Air Force. I was there for my squad. I was there for my unit. I wasn't there for anybody else. I didn't want to get deployed for anybody else other than to put a shining example in my unit. That's it. The Marines, they don't fight for anybody except the Marines. That's why it's Marine pride and everything else. It's not like, yeah, America. No, it's like, yeah, Marines. And that's really the overall feeling you get in the military, is it's a brotherhood and we get orders, but it's just, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's just a job, but that's kind of how it feels, that we're on this mission, this adventure in life together, and it's all about us. Like, there was four different flights, police flights, when I was at my base, and we hated each other. If you weren't on whatever, the A, B, C, or D flight, we would destroy you. We made a coin for our unit. It was a dime, because that's what we do. We drop dimes on all the other cops. Is we would actively go out and see how we could screw over anybody else in the military, anybody else's spouse, civilian, anything other than our flight. And that's how a lot of the military is. It's kind of sad.
Now, do us a favor, because Maya represents a very specific type of personality. So if you want to enlighten us a little bit, if you're a member of the military that listens to the podcast, please go to the Facebook page. You can find it through WeirdLibertarians.com and leave us a comment on this post. Creighton, sorry to cut you off in there. I was trying to finish the thought up. What were you about to say before I rudely interrupting me?
I was just basically going to reinforce your point. It's like, you can even look back at people in the Confederacy didn't think they were fighting for slavery. They thought they were fighting for the ideas within the original ideas that built America.
Right.
So, I mean, there's letters from soldiers who are saying that they thought they were fighting for, you know, individual liberty. And they have, like, actual Confederate soldiers saying that. Not, oh, I'm fighting for Jefferson Davis, or, oh, I'm fighting because I want to keep my slaves. Because that, I mean, there's historical documents to say otherwise.
They were fighting the war of Northern aggression.
Well, and one of the problems is how they got people to fight, too, and unify is... It's not they're not necessarily fighting for ideals anymore. They're fighting for this country that supposedly enshrines these ideals. When what America great, it wasn't our government, it wasn't our borders. It was individuals voluntarily coming together to build something, to create something. It was the lack of intrusion and regulation and government intervention that built this country. So fighting and honoring it, and that's the thing, is they use, like, in the Civil War, everybody that fought in that thought they were doing something else. No slave owners fought in that war. They convinced all the dumb farmers and all the other dumb hicks, North and South, to go fight brothers, sisters, families, just because you're by this arbitrary line, go kill those people. And they used the country, the patriotism and crap,
the union,
to get them to go do it.
We have to have a history podcast with Maya. So then Hannibal took the elephants over the Alps.
That's not 100% true, because Virginia didn't even secede from the Union until Lincoln told him to fire on South Carolina. I think there was a little bit more to it than just, like, we're trying to convince them to fight for us for an ulterior motive.
No, I'm not saying that's the only reason, but that was a lot of the reason how they convinced a lot of soldiers to fight. Is the whole patriotism thing.
Oh, I'm sure
thing.
They did.
And
propaganda
the
is one of the main things that pushes any war.
You got to fight for this country. If you don't kill those little sand, the and everything, and they're going to destroy America.
Boom.
I can't believe how close we just came. This podcast came to saying that word. We got so close, man. So close.
I think it was going to be sand dwellers, in her defense.
I was going to say sand people.
People.
But, like, I was thinking Star Wars. I couldn't think of what their name is. What are the people in Star Wars called?
The Tusken Raiders.
Maya was referring to those things in parody. That's not, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yes. The Tusken Raiders.
No, it's true. Maya was mocking the 70-year-old lady in the straw hat.
No, she's the first racist voluntarist.
Hey.
No, that's not true.
Racism.
Ask some of them about Israel. Yeah, there you go. All right, so let's wrap up on this topic real quick. Anybody, Gina, something to say on this topic, patriotism?
No, not really.
All right, thank you very much. No Joe?
Yeah, I just want to – the way that I kind of distinguish it is, you know, that we are only exceptional so long as we are moving in the direction of being the freest society possible. Like, we have to – lead by example as a nation. And I think that's where we're a little bit backwards, and that's where our nationalism becomes unhealthy at this point. Because, for instance, I heard on the radio today HGTV, the home and garden TV station, they were giving some like holiday ideas for the 4th of July. And one of the festive ideas that they had was to use an American flag as a tablecloth. Did you guys hear about this?
No. Yeah, just saying, okay. You just said festive, right. Kind of funny.
I'm not married.
Yeah, all right. There were a lot of people. There were a lot of people who were calling in to the radio station, the show that I was listening to, and they were bent, man. They were really upset that somebody would even think about using the American flag as a tablecloth.
Yeah, I heard
and allowing
that.
It to touch anything and allowing crumbs to fall on it, allowing this. Hey. But those same people who would be so against that are like mute when it comes to the whole NSA issue. And, like, that is so ass backwards to me. And that's where nationalism becomes unhealthy, and that's where we stop moving in the direction of the freest society possible, stop leading by example, and we're no longer exceptional. So we need to get our priorities in order if we are ever going to be anything other than this muddled state we're currently in, or worse.
Well said.
Joe, do you know who developed... Hold on. Do you know who developed that story and made that a thing? Guess what reporter?
If you were Todd Starnes.
Yes. A-hole
really?
Todd Starnes.
Spangles closet lover, Todd Starnes.
You know, Todd Starnes, my hatred burns deep for you. Go ahead, Creighton.
Yeah, it does.
I went and saw at the Leadership Institute here has a breakfast every month where they bring in some speaker. And Justin Amash was the speaker. It was last Wednesday, I believe. And they asked him, you know, because the Salon had written this article that said, you know, libertarians need to answer one question. It's, where is the example of a libertarian country that's ever worked?
Oh, Michael Lind. I hate
yes.
that guy.
Oh, my God. I read his follow-up article today, and I wanted to punch him through
the
computer.
He's had
screen.
Two follow-up articles because he realizes the hits that you get off of trolling libertarians.
Yeah, which is actually kind of good.
Yeah,
but anyway,
it's a good idea.
So somebody asked Justin Amash. They asked Justin Amash, you know, what is his answer to this question? How can you identify, like, where are the examples of the libertarian countries? And he said, America was the libertarian country when it started. What we've done is move away from it. So we're seeing all these bad things happen, and as we've moved away from the foundation of America, which is absolutely the most libertarian foundation in the history of the world. I mean, there is no country that was founded on a more libertarian principle than the United States of America.
Maybe
and it worked excellently. It worked great. And it's only started to screw up as we've decided that we will pass the buck of responsibility onto this central state. And I think that kind of just ultimately proves the point there. It's just, you know, disenchantment only grows as, you know, the state grows.
It's
the federal government grows.
It's funny that you mentioned that. Earlier today when Spangle said you guys kind of need to talk about your philosophy, and I was just looking around and doing some research, and our downfall was when we abandoned the Articles of Confederation. Because with a confederacy is where the state has a little bit of central power over just the state governments. It has it cannot exert power over the people. And so when we abandoned that type of setup, it has just been a gradual growth of centralized power over and over and over.
Welcome to minarchy, Greg.
I know.
That's exactly what you've become a minarchist. Next stop, Maya.
It'll be a party, I can tell you that.
I would say, and I'll answer this before we move on to the wrap up here, I would say the patriotism, when, you know, back when I was a good little brown shirt Republican, rooting for Bush, you know, even before that, back in 2003, it was downright un-American to speak out against the war. Well, what I didn't understand then was that they were saying to me that if your patriotism requires you to kill other people for almost no reason, or no reason, depending on your view, or no legal reason, then you're not really a patriot. You're betraying the principles on which this country was founded, and you become an anti-patriot, essentially. You know, when you look at the Iraq War, that was an unnecessary, illegal, needless war. And if I were playing this back to 2003 Chris Spangle, he would be so disappointed in future Chris Spangle. But
see, I don't know that it actually... If you're arguing the Iraq War on moral grounds from a human perspective, that's what Christopher Hitchens was always arguing about with liberals, was that they were clearly killing their own people. And so if Bush would have, you know, said, we have an obligation here, but then we would have an obligation everywhere, the Sudan, anywhere in the world where essentially there was genocide, you'd be justified. But we were lied to about it, and it was for political reasons. There can be a moral way to look at it.
The Syrian government gassed to death 150 Syrians, and I find that morally reprehensible.
Me too.
But I also find it reprehensible that we are, as a government, out of my paycheck, sending weapons to a group of people that are killing Syrian Christians. We're arming rebels who... Do we not learn from the mistakes of Osama bin Laden, the Mujahideen, and Afghanistan against the USSR? I mean...
No, we don't.
We don't. And so, on some people's definition, it is unpatriotic to question that decision by our president, the commander-in-chief, to arm Syrian rebels for a positive outcome. Well, I'm saying bullcrap. And in fact, write this down, Gina. I'm saying bull. I think that's when patriotism is about loving the good things about your country and the culture of our country and the fact that we as a people grow and that we become accepting. Yes, we were founded on a nation that accepted slavery, but we eventually, we as a country, we grew out of that. We did better. With the civil rights, we as a country moved forward and convinced our government what was right and wrong and forced on backwards politicians what was right and wrong. Gay marriage is another instance of Americans growing and seeing that what they're doing is wrong and they're righting a wrong, and we as a people continue to grow, and that's what's good. That's what makes me patriotic. But not supporting Lindsey Graham and John McCain and John Boehner and Barack Obama, those guys. Am I right? Can I get a high five? All right.
We'll even like fist pump.
All right, give me a fist pump. All right, so let's wrap up, guys.
Hold on, I want to say something to that Syrian weapons thing.
Okay.
My big question is, why aren't we as a nation outraged about our defense spending in general? We spend more on defense than almost every other nation combined, yet here we are giving away our weapons because we have excess of weapons. If we have so many that we're giving them out to other nations like it's, you know, I don't know, jihad welfare, why aren't we pissed off that we aren't?
Jihad welfare.
I mean,
like
seriously,
that.
Why aren't we pissed off that we aren't, I guess, piss testing them for taking our weapons? I mean, you've got every southern, I don't want to say unintelligent person.
Stop it. People in the South are wonderful, lovely people. You should
some
spend
of them
some time
are,
there.
But the ones who are calling for your tax dollars to be spent to have the urine of welfare recipients tested aren't necessarily using the same logical grounds that I would agree with.
Right.
But here we are giving out weapons, things that we're spending the bulk of our national budget on.
Now, let me pick up that ball and introduce, at the end of the show, we always say if there's anything that we didn't get to talk about, we missed, throw it in here if you want to promote something, blah, blah, blah. Mine was actually going to be the New York Times story that we tweeted out yesterday, where there was an Egyptian live televised conference, and this basically Ethiopia is looking to dam the Nile, which is going to cut off all the water to Egypt. And so they're contemplating going to war with Ethiopia over this. And they had a televised hearing, and this one guy speaks up and he says, "Well, it's always good to have these secret meetings because then we can talk freely. And, you know, it's not really about the Ethiopians. We all know that we're really just here to fight the true enemy, which is Israel in the United States." And everybody in the room is like, "Yeah, that's exactly right." And then Morsi, the president of Egypt, opens up the mic. He's like, this is on Egyptian TV. We just want to remind some people. And everybody in the room laughs. But it just speaks to that point. Here's a group of people, the president's cabinet, saying the real enemy is the United States of America. How many arms have we sent to Egypt and to Morsi and his government? Mm-hmm. And we are actively giving weaponry to people who hate our guts. So
it just seems like a good idea. Why don't we just make more weapons than we can use and then distribute them globally to people that hate us with our own money?
Why don't we just make hating America illegal?
We should just make hating America illegal. That's exactly.
Or we just sell them faulty nukes. That's what I would do.
My other point is Egyptian elections today.
No. We just need to send Chuck Norris over there with a headband, a hatchet, and an AK-47.
So the Egyptian Iranian elections are today. Ahmadinejad is no more. They're electing a new president. Expect absolutely nothing different.
Oh, no.
Based on all the candidates.
The president there has no power.
Nope.
Okay.
The imams.
Nope.
Right.
They're everything.
All right. Final word. Let's give Maya a chance to plug and promote something.
Well, I'll promote something for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the first paid social terrorist ever. at least in Indiana, in our group, someone is hiring me to go and...
To a party?
Don't say what...
I'm not saying what it is, who it is, or anything, but someone is going to have me go do a little bit of...
In-your-face
social terrorism. You better answer for what you've done, since you're not going to answer anybody else, you stupid, lazy, bastardized elected official.
Are we calling this performance art?
No. This is actually going to kind of be like...
First Amendment
social
exercise.
Terrorism.
This is
social terrorism.
Yeah, this is a First Amendment exercise.
Yeah. I don't believe in the First Amendment, but yeah. It's going to be... You could call it that.
I'm trying to help you.
I hate free speech.
Oh. No, I hate pieces of hemp paper that are now illegal, but... somehow grant us rights. But no, I'm
just going
to
get me wound up in jail.
I am going to be selling these services to anybody. If you want to hire me for a party, if you want to hire me to go, to the Indiana Republicans convention or Republican Party stuff, Democrat Party stuff,
I will pay you
to go up and pat Mike Pence
on the ass. I will go up there and
Ben Wall beat his balls.
No. I want you to just do a little ball tickle right in public. I want it to be on the front page of Indy Star. Just a little ball tickle. A little swipe.
I will go up there and there goes our show. I am higher for anything, especially if it creates headlines and attention and helps people like Chris Spangle get, scare off advertisers.
This is such a YouTube opportunity for a YouTube channel.
Could you imagine?
Maya Axton,
I just want to highlight something. Maya said, so if you need a social terrorist, if you want somebody to run your party, I'm available. It's like, why would I want to hire you to come over and run my party?
No.
Someone else's party.
What happened if you have a family event and there's a family member or a friend or a neighbor that you don't know how to tell to piss off?
You can't stand them.
Yeah, you hire me. I'll come over. I'll make sure. And no one else will really realize what's going on. And they'll all love me for it. But I'll make sure they never, ever communicate with you again. if their house is on fire and you're the only one home and you have a cell phone and they don't, they won't even ask you. They won't run over to your house and ask you to use your phone. I'll make sure they never bug you again. And think about it. How many times you've been at like a 4th of July party or something, there's that one group of people or friends
Greg is really into this. I think it's a huge opportunity, personally.
No. Everybody wants it because nobody wants to be the dick that goes, we don't like you, don't come here anymore. Because then you look bad for everybody. You hire someone like me discreetly, hey, problem solved.
Dude, franchising and royalties with a full training program.
So why don't you just name it what it is? Hire Maya to be a dick, so you don't have to be one.
Well, no, because it's like Dick Tracy, a private eye, private dick. No, that name's already taken.
No, social terrorist.
Social terrorist. That is exactly what I am, because no matter where I go or what I do, I make everyone uncomfortable. And now that I'm online and I have a website and everything, I make you feel uncomfortable in your own home.
Yeah.
She is the only person the NSA won't spy on. They're like, no, I can't handle this.
Give us a way to contact you and spell it.
Facebook, Twitter, but you can go to creatingmaya.com, which is it's creating. Everyone knows how to spell that if you don't, go back to school.
That is
and Maya, M-I-A-H.
Creating.
Creating.
M-I-A-H.com. All right, last thing. Creighton, wrap up. Last thing.
I don't know. I mean, we kind of covered everything I wanted to talk about. Man of Steel comes out tomorrow. But I guess ultimately, leave the podcast with this. America, I'm speaking to you, speaking directly to you. Stand up and grow a pair of nuts.
Yes, dust them off.
That's it.
What, by voting or passing a law?
Sarah, could you please stop socially terrorizing my podcast? Joe Ruiz.
I'll say something similar to what Creighton did, but I'll say it kind of in my own little way. I understand, like I said earlier, I sympathize with those who see the power structure as it currently is and they realize that they've got a lot to lose, and it's scary to stand up and be outspoken and think the unpopular thought. I can sympathize with that sentiment, but focus on the fact that the more powerful the authority in this country gets, the more we give them, the more they will take, and the more we will have to fear, and the more we will have to lose, and that cycle will perpetuate. So just kind of weights and measures, and realize that it is important that we tell them no more. And secondly, quick plug, without getting too deep into it, look up the Marketplace Fairness Act and ask yourself the question, how come every time the government says that they're doing something for the sake of being fair, they get richer and the rest of us just end up being more poor?
Stealth debt ceiling increase.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Or the contract holders or the family members of the representatives end up getting rich quick.
It was also a debt ceiling increase.
That's all I got.
Greg?
I don't know. I'm like thoroughly depressed. I just don't like. I really am like thoroughly. I'm going to spend a lot of thought. No, I love Maya.
Oh, okay.
No, she didn't do it. It's the American people.
You can come over afterwards and I'll cheer you up.
There you go.
Gross. By the way, that would be the moment when you should go check out the YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that come free with one purchase of social terrorism? Is that like your coupon for like or your Groupon? It'll be come over to the apartment and see what you're missing.
That is one hell of a BOGO.
I mean, you never know. And I have like three hidden webcams hooked up to my computer that record things all the time. So when people come over, I have
I knew I recognized you before I met you.
Girlfriend come over, and we do workout. We do P90X on my projector and. She has no idea how many times I've recorded her.
Wow.
She does now.
She does now because I'm tagging her on this and giving her the minute mark.
Like an unpaid NSA employee.
I know. Maya.
I should be. I'd be the best ever, but I troll the NSA at the same time as trolling the American public. I mean,
Maya Axton telling you that anarchy will be exactly like the government we have now. All right, Greg, you're thoroughly depressed.
No, I'm just thoroughly depressed because I just don't see an avenue for change. But, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just depressed.
The answer to this problem like is not? The bottle.
Are you, yeah, I know.
Have we not given you the – and the one thing that nobody wants to talk about now that they were kind of talking about when Obama was first running and ran for a second term – is that one thing that people were still kind of whispering at and hinting at that they won't even bring up now except people like me and Adam Kokesh, is that there's still one undeniable, quick and easy way to solve all of our problems.
You could stop right there.
10:17.
Yeah, if you want to hear that solution...
Nullification.
If you want to hear that solution, you can go to...
Adam versus the man.
CreatingMaya.com, yeah. And you can listen to The Uncontrollables.
The Uncontrollables.com. Episode 15 is where we talked about the NSA and how to take over the government.
Yep. So you can get that at. Go to iTunes and search for The Uncontrollables.
All right, come on, man.
All right. Creighton has more important things to do with his life.
I've been on here for like an hour and a half, 2 hours now.
I know the gay bars out there around you are just hopping. Go
Dude,
pick me up and
Maya,
nice
they are bumping.
Make Maya, sure you get me Lindsey Graham's autograph if you see him out.
Maya is like the wacky neighbor. Maya's the Kramer that nobody wants. Just like drops in the middle of your podcast. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this episode of We Are Libertarians. As always, Yay. We promise next week, we promise that we will
do better next time.
No, we won't.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.